announced that there's a colloquium session at 3:30. It's in 115 downstairs. It's supposed to be there. I don't know. I heard there was a leak in the room, so it's, we may have to change the room. But anyway, so it's the topic is proximity in space. I don't know if it would be good, if you might find your chief certainly welcome to join in, but I will have to, unfortunately, end the class on time. I apologize. All right. I did return everybody's paper, so I hope that the comments that you got were helpful. And I think the next one is scheduled for Monday. No, something for Friday, right? Right. But since I will not have time to look at it over the weekend, I will give you until Monday. That's okay. You can still turn it in on Friday if you want to, but turn it in through the ELC system or email it to me. It's best to do it through ELC, and that way I can return to you through ELC. I don't have to fly up my inbox and search for your paper and try to find it. Okay? And you have it there on ELC to refer to along with my comments.
Have you put space. Have you made the assignment yet so that we can turn it in? It's the
no.
Last time I
No, I haven't done it yet. I'm not quite that old, as you may have noticed. May not have noticed. But I'll try to do it tomorrow so I can be able to turn it in on Friday. For those of you actually do things in advance. Yeah. All right. Questions or comments about the assignment? The assignment is exactly the same as the last assignment. And I hope that the comments that I gave you are helpful and help you to write a better paper this time around. For some of you, you're not used to finding arguments and presenting the arguments. That takes some doing and some learning. I've said this before, it's a skill to be acquired, developed, perfected. The more you do it, the better you are. Get at it. Once you find an argument presented, then you need to find something interesting to say about it, something problematic about it. That can take some doing. That's the difficult part of it. Sometimes one thinks and comes up with something, and it's not as interesting as it might be. That's a challenge of writing the paper. But the main thing to do is to make sure that the argument is stated clearly and concisely. Because if you don't have an argument to work with, then you can't possibly have a criticism of it. There's nothing that you're criticizing. So you need to do the steps in the order. All right, any questions or comments about the papers? Just received back some of you from the 4010 class, and those of you in the 601 class received me back at a different time. Questions, comments? All right, the next assignment. Don't write on the same topic. I have your paper already. I know what you wrote. I will recognize it if you turn in the same paper. And you should find, if you wrote on Book Yoda, write on Book New, write on Book Amanda, find something else to write. There's a lot of things to write. Write on one of the arguments that is in a text that we've covered. And I hope that you will find something wrong with the reasoning. I hope you'll find something wrong with my reasoning, with Aristotle's reasoning. For a number of you, maybe you didn't quite realize that this is not a paper where you write up your class notes. This is a paper about how to read a text. And you need to be able to, you need to have a text to work with. So I ask you to say, to look for a particular passage and to say, I'm writing on this passage. By the end of the paper, that passage ought to look a lot different to you. one of the ways you can know if you've done something is when you go back and read the passage. It looks a lot more coherent and interesting, holds together. Because one of the things you can learn from a class like this is how to read a book like this book, or these books by Aristotle that we're reading. It's not something you're born with, it's not something that you have acquired by learning how to read. This is reading philosophy. So, identify a passage, and hopefully your criticisms will make the passage come alive. And if you find something wrong with it, look to see what Aristotle would say in his own defense. I mean, he is, you know, sort of among the top three philosophers. So if you want to give him a chance to respond to your criticism. That doesn't mean you couldn't be right, but chances are he'll have something interesting to say back to defend himself.
Who are the others in the top three?
I can't hear you. What?
Who are the others in the top three? Just curious.
The final three countdown? Yeah, does anyone know?
Plato.
Yeah. Plato, Aristotle. Anyone else?
Descartes.
Kant. Or the top. Different people put different people put, you know, have a different idea of which one should be number one, but pretty much everybody agrees that those. There's a lot of controversy about number four. I mean, the top, you know, the top 100, the top 40 countdown here.
Number one since 300 BC.
Yeah. Right. Okay, anyway. Yeah, Jason.
It's due at noon.
It's due at noon. Okay. So, I hope you haven't had any trouble using the ELC system. Not the best system in the world, but mostly works, usually. Yeah. Questions or comments about the papers?
Will you be available on time if we look at them, and do you have questions before the next, I believe you have a Friday meeting?
Yeah, I have office hours on Friday.
Okay. So,
since I'm not going to be here today, because I have to close, so I'll stay on Friday. Usually I get more emails, so seeing me in person, you will find distasteful, apparently. Okay. It's not so bad to email. Other questions or comments about procedure? All right, so we talked last time what we did with Lambda, in a manner of speaking, pretty quickly. And I asked you today to look at ethics. Book 1 of the 19 Ethics, chapters 6 and 7, and I said you should look at, I think, 1 and 2 as well. So let's begin talking about analogy. That's the theme of the course. And we have an important analogy in book Lambda. And we had an important analogy in book Yoda, and saw that book Yoda, the analogy was a happy story, and book Noon, the analogy was not a happy story. And book Lambda, it looked kind of happy, but not as happy as another story. It had a legitimacy to it. Analogies have a legitimacy to them, but they're not from it. So what I want to do is begin with book one here, chapter 6, and I'll just ask you, whatever possessed me to ask you to read this in a course on analogy. What is this about here? Book 1, chapter 6, what's the theme of the chapter? Yeah, the universal good. And in particular, who is the author? What does Plato say about the good, or what does Platonist say about the good? It's one. Yeah. What is that?
That each thing that is good refers back to it.
Okay, if it's one,
then good.
Okay. It's one, and somehow everything that's good is an instance of it, somehow? What else? What else can you say about it? What else do that, those plants say about it? Or does aerosol claim play as well? Well, Aristotle says that too. That's in the first, that's in chapter one, though. Like all things. Every art, activity, and endeavor has some good, aims at some good, and therefore the good is that at which all things aim. That's how this word opens. So, yes, Plato does say everything aims at the good. So is Aristotle. Anything? What else? What else is Plato saying?
It's a universal form.
It's universal. Yeah. What does that mean?
It's meant in the same way for all things.
Right. Okay. A universal is a one over many. It's the same character that belongs to every instance. So he says there is a something called the good. What kind of thing it is in question. Sometimes it says it's not really a form, it's something beyond the forms, beyond beings. But he also says, this is what Aristotle is talking about here, that every thing is good in some way. And the goodness that everything shares is a universal goodness. It belongs, it's the same good that belongs to everything. Just like this is a chair, this is a chair, this is a chair. Each one is a chair. You're a person, you're a person. There's a human, universal human being. There's a universal good that belongs to all goods. And this universal good, what else is good to it? It's universal, and what's the second characteristic? Platonic. The platonic good.
Cause.
What?
It's a cause.
Yeah, it's a cause somehow. Somehow it's a cause. That's some sort of causal character. But probably a formal cause of goodness and things. And that's its universality. Anything else?
It's motionless.
What's that?
It's motionless.
It's motionless, yeah. Every form or every internal thing is motionless.
Is it good for this? Good in and of itself.
It's good in and of itself, yeah.
It's separate.
Separate. Yeah, separate. Good. Okay. So it's universal and separate. Those are the things. Now, what does Aristotle think about the Platonic good? Rory, you can answer this question without having read this chapter thoroughly.
It's a sad story.
Yeah.
It's a sad story.
He's wrong. That's it. He's wrong about everything. Except, of course, Aristotle is actually very close to Plato. He's wrong about everything because he's actually saying something similar to what Aristotle is saying. Aristotle needs to distinguish himself from what Plato says. Okay, great. What's wrong with this Platonic good? What we have it here in chapter 6 is a series of arguments. So, somebody present me an argument or another argument here? Yes.
It says that the good is broken up in a plethora of ways and that there's no single science of the good, and because of that it can't be platonic form.
Okay, so there's no single science. The science is knowledge, right? There's no single knowledge of the good. Okay, good. Well, what are these many ways that the good is set?
Good to everyone.
Yeah. There's a good. Can you explain what that
would be? There's a good thing, there's a good quality, there's a good quantity.
Yeah. Okay. So the good is distinct in each category, and the categories are, remember, general? Looks like the good is distinct in each genus. So what follows from that? Yeah, there's nothing in common to every genus. There's no being, doesn't have a character. There's no genus of being. There's no genus of being for the same reason there's no genus of good. The good in each category, in each genus, is distinct. There's nothing in common because there's no overarching genus to all things. Okay, great. Why do we call them all good?
Because they're just like it's the genus.
Right, okay, so it's an analogy. Just as there's a good in time, the right time, there's also good in other things, a good quality, the right amount, the good quantity is the right amount, good in relation. The right place, the right time. The time, the place is good for everything. It seems that the good is different in the different genera, and that there's nothing common in each genus, but every genus. So the good doesn't exist as a single thing. The only way we can talk about the good is by understanding an analogy that stretches across each genus. So we really sort of ran together two arguments here. The first argument David told us about, that there are different sciences, and each science has a good that it treats, which is the good that's known by the shoemaker, making the good shoes, and there's the good of the tragedy, making a good tragedy, and there's how to make a good drama. And there are different kinds of good things that are known by different kinds of knowledge, proven by there being different kinds of knowledges. That one argument is through the different knowledges. Each knowledge knows a distinct genus, so there must be multiple goods, because there's no overarching knowledge. And then there was the argument about the genera. There are distinct genera of being, and there's the categories, and there's a good in each genus, and there's nothing in common among the genera. All right, sound good? That's what he says. Got it right. What's wrong with these arguments?
Yes.
I'm the impression that we can call them all good if they have absolutely nothing. And even though.
Well, maybe we should take a step back. I think let's look at that. We can call them all good if they have absolutely nothing. Have we encountered any thing, idea, concept?
There's the one.
What do all ones have in common?
Measure.
Yeah, but what's that? What is it to be measured a genus?
No.
Is that a common thing?
I guess it's defined as a genus, so it's
not. Yeah, each measure is defined as a genus, so it isn't anything common. So David's argument is not going to be successful.
It seems like that.
Got the first sentence out.
It seems they have the common frame for four people. So that would be a kind of, he says that,
what is appropriate for this mean?
Well, it depends, like, a good measure is the right amount, the measure amount.
The right measure.
Opportune moments, right situations.
They're all right. But if the right is just another word for the good, right? That's good.
So I guess it's just.
Are you saying what Tom just said? Tom said there's a measure in each genus, and they have to have something in common. But then I said, okay, well, what's the measure in each genus? It's defined in relation, in respect to the genus. It's like the one in each genus. It's indivisible. But indivisibility in one genus is not the same as indivisibility in another genus. There isn't a thing of indivisibility. Remember back at the very beginning of the book of Yoda, the principle of the cause? Element, what's the element? Well, maybe it's fire. There is fire, but there isn't to be an element. There is something that's one, but there isn't a to be one. So the question is good an analogy? Like one? And which is what he seems to say. And then there's nothing that is common to the good in each genus. There's a right amount and a right time and a right character to have. Good character, bad character, good time, bad time. But there isn't anything similar. There isn't anything that's the same across the generic lines. Is that the way things stand, or do they stand some other way?
They're not good in the same sense, maybe. The other, just like the categories, they're not all, they don't all have the same status. All the others are dependent on substance. So their goods should be dependent as well. But the science of the good should be directed at what's not a dependent, what's good primarily, good in itself. So maybe the fact that there are different goods and different genera isn't such a big deal, because what we're concerned with is the primary good.
Yeah, okay, good. So maybe the good that is the defining good is the good in one of the categories, the category that's the primary category. The good of substance is going to be prior to all the other goods. That sounds pretty plausible. Now, did that work in the case of one? Why doesn't it work in the case of one? Or does it work in the case of one? Is everybody with me here? Is everybody clear with you with that issue?
Because one wrong is not enough. Okay, let's try to pull that.
Substance, quality, and quantity. And there are a number of other things. The claim is that in each genus, there is a good. Not only is there a good in substance, whatever that would mean, that's hard to understand. It makes more sense here in quality, because there's good and bad in quality. And then in quantity, there's a right amount and a wrong amount. It seems like there's a good and bad quantity, though that's a little hard to understand also. A good place and a bad place, pretty hard to understand.
For date.
But the claim is what?
For a date. That's making a joke.
Good place for a date, yeah. But it depends on the time.
Yeah.
Might be the wrong time for the joke. All right, so the claim is, on one hand, that the good isn't one thing, it's different in each genus. So there's a good, presumably there's a good here. Maybe even lots of goods here. Some good here, some goods here. Well, but there isn't anything in common to the good musician and the right time, the right place. Or the good coat.
Well, you're saying that that's problematic.
But why is that problematic? First of all, what kind of structure are we talking about? You said it before. There's a good here, a good here, a good here. There isn't anything in common. So why do we call them all goods?
It's an analogy.
So we have an analogical structure. That's one possibility. And Graham suggested another possibility. What's the other possibility?
They also need the instruments of a greater good.
Is that what you mean?
There's a primary sense in which they all point back to the primary sense of good.
So maybe it's not. That's where Plato thinks it is, right? And Aristotle says, no, it's not up here. There's different, because there's nothing in common to them because they belong to different genera. And there's nothing in common. But maybe they will go, just like these other genera, you don't have qualities by themselves. Qualities are always characteristics of some substance. Quantities always belong to some substance. So the good quality also belongs to some substance. And maybe it's the good of substance that somehow defines the good in these other categories. So that's a possibility, right?
It's not going to work, though, right? But it's not going to work.
You know, from the tone of my voice, it's
going to Well, there's different goods for different substances, right?
That's one of the problems, yeah.
Anything else?
No, Plato's episode. And that was wrong.
There's two genera in substance. The highest good is going to be the genera that we're not in.
All right, so good. Because we actually go at three, but there's one, perishable. Maybe it's this good up here. That's the one we earlier were talking about. That's what defines this good and directly all the other goods. What's the good of the unmoved Buddha? It doesn't have a good. It doesn't do anything. It always kind of lack something in order to have a good.
Or could it not just, could it just be activity?
Maybe it just is good, not in the sense that it
it's not
has
unique.
What it seeks, but in the sense that it doesn't lack anything. Maybe it's complete, full, and good in that sense. In fact, if we read more of Oglanda, you find at the very end of it, that's the way he talks about it. Even Oglanda 7, he talks about the unbeliever as good in that way. And it comes out even more strikingly at the end. So, it does seem that there is a good that's somehow defined as the good of the cosmos. Defined in terms of this unbeliever. So now, what kind of picture do we have? Not an analogy anymore.
When you talk about back to the, is that still not saying that its nature is to be good? Because we talked about, like, there is nothing that is one. There's just things that are one with respect to.
Yeah, right. Okay, so is there something whose nature is to be good? That's really your question.
It seemed like he was not saying that at first, but now.
Now maybe he is saying it. Maybe there is something that's just good, the nature of goodness itself. God is great. God is good.
Is it such that we're going?
What?
Is that where we're going, or is it?
Yeah, well, could we say that about the first principle, or whatever the first principle turns out to be, that it's just, by definition, good. It's just essentially good. Or will the goodness have to be something else?
It would probably have to be something else, because the essence of the unmoved mover isn't to be good, it's to be the unmoved mover.
The good is an end of an action. The good is that which, actions aim to be. The unmoved mover is the activity of the unmoved mover doesn't aim at something else. And it's not, the unmoved mover isn't something that you can attain. can't become a god. So maybe in your mother's eyes.
But he also argues elsewhere that not all goods point to something. Not all goods are instrumental. Right? There's got to be something good in itself, otherwise everything's just good for another and another and another.
Yeah, okay. So the unmoved mover is maybe an end of other things. It's good in the sense of thing. It's not, but it's a funny sense of, it's not the ordinary sense of good. Ordinarily, you know, it's the, you know, the new car, that's the good. I'm striving for that. I'm working really hard, teaching lots of classes, studying philosophy hard so I can get my new car. Then it's, there's a good that as is the end of the activity. That's the normal sense of the good. Unmoved mover already has its end. It doesn't have an end outside of it. And even if the unmoved mover is the end of all things, it's the final cause of all things, it's not a final cause that anything can attain. So it's very peculiar as an end.
I don't remember if he specifically argued for this or not, Plato, but could knowledge be the good itself? Because it seems like all of these particular instances of good are all contingent on some form of knowledge. So the knowledge would be, knowledge itself would be the commonality of all the things.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a fair guess. That's sounds like a plausible Aristotelian idea. What about mosquitoes and snails?
Wouldn't you contend that any knowledge is good knowledge?
Yeah,
that's knowledge of
that. I don't have any problem with knowledge as being good. It's certainly a human good. But what about the snails? Are they pursuing knowledge? Mosquitoes? They want blood. Maybe knowledge doesn't seem to be capable. But lots of things that are doing, lots of entities that are doing things. For a mosquito, a juicy mammal is a good. And that's not knowledge. There are lots of goods that don't seem to have knowledge.
So that's only good for people and people things.
Yeah. Right. So we seem to have two possibilities here. One is that there's the unmoved mover. And maybe this is the good for other things, although it's a funny kind of good because it's not something that other things can really attain. And maybe it's a good that somehow orders the universe. Or maybe we can talk about ourselves. When we talk about the good character, the right amount, and the right time, maybe that's relative to us. We could have two possibilities here. In fact, we have three possibilities. One is an analogical structure where the good is just distinct. And we don't have any knowledge of the good. Plato was wrong to talk about the good. Not possible to know, any more than it's possible to talk about numbers that are in here and here and here, or the one and the dyad that somehow would span all the different genera. One possibility is analogical, then there's no knowledge. Another possibility is there is some sort of primary substance and everything is referred back to this primary substance. And then we have a little problem because we have two different candidates here for the primary substance. There's the unmoved mover, and there's us. Okay. But in both cases, we have the same sort of structure. It's called, in Greek, it's called a pros-en structure. It's related to one thing. And there's a question here about what the one thing is that it's related to. But not everything is going to be referred, not every good is going to be referred back to us. I just talked about snails and mosquitoes. The good for the mosquito is not a good for us. We can't, there are lots of other things that have their own goods. So we're going to have a problem about which thing to choose, among other problems. The question about the good is, what kind of structure do good things, does the world have, does the universe have, in which there can be goods? Analogical? That's not going to work. There's nothing in common. Some sort of process structure? That may work, but it can't include all the goods.
Maybe we don't care about all the goods.
Maybe we don't care about all the goods. I care about them. What does Aristotle end up saying about the good here? I'm making too much progress in this chapter.
Doesn't he say what Dylan just said?
What?
Look, let's just focus on the good for us.
Eventually, that's what he says. What does he say here about the good?
Talks about three different types of things, like the hedonistic form of goods.
Well, that's different. That's not here. That's not in chapter 6. That comes in a different place. But he does talk about different kinds of goods here. So you can find the passage.
That instrumental and for their own sake goods, is that the division you're talking about?
It's around there. It's around 1097A1 here. Okay, it's actually a few lines up there. 26, 27. But then in what way are things called good? They don't seem to be like the things that only chance to have the same nature. Are goods won then by being derived from one good or by all contributing to one good? That's us. That should be familiar to you. Right? That's the cross-end view. Or are they rather won by analogy? Maybe three. But in this translation, it looks like two possible. Maybe through derived from, contributing to. Derived from is the Platonic notion. More in the diet. What does that mean?
Do they have the same name by being derived from one thing, or by all adding up together into one thing, or instead by analogy, or rather by analogy?
By analogy, okay. Yeah. So then he says, certainly as sight is in the body, so is reasoning the soul in other cases. But perhaps these subjects are better dismissed from the present. For perfect precision about them would be appropriate to another branch of philosophy. By the way, which branch?
Metaphysics.
Yeah. Where he says almost, Luke says very little about the good of metaphysics, unfortunately. All right, anyway. So he doesn't really answer the question. But one thing is pretty clear, the Platonic view, which is the view of analogy. That's a wrong view of the good. It's a view, I should qualify this here. What Plato talked about is a good that's common to everything. That's not the case. What is rather the case is all of the goods that Plato talked about as being one thing are only one by analogy. And insofar as they're one by analogy, they don't constitute the subject of one science. So what I was looking for before is one might say, there's a good in each genus, but we know that all of the other subordinate genera depend on substance. And we also know that being, in a way, is a kind of genus. A being is a kind of genius, maybe good is a kind of genius. That doesn't seem to be one of the options that's mentioned here. Yeah.
So is he also saying that the way Plato talked about the good talking about it wrongly, but even if we talk about it by analogy, that study properly belongs to metaphysics. It's not what we're going to be concerned with the ethics.
Right, why would it properly belong to metaphysics?
Metaphysics studies all the...
How is it that, how could a metaphysics study belong? How can metaphysics study any analogy if an analogy occurs among things in different genera, and one science knows one genus?
So metaphysics is the science that knows all genera.
Yeah, but how could that be? Because,
yeah,
right? All beings yeah. some constituted genus.
Treats
all. But he talks about how we can treat it like it's a genus.
It's got to be able to. You could say it's not a strict genus, strictly proper genus, but in a way, it's a kind of genus. That's that cross-hand character. So the one question is whether the genus that it is a genus of being through which we can treat the one and also the good, or is it a genus of being and also a genus of one and a genus of good? Is there just one genus, one sort of genus, or three sorts of genus, three sorts of genera? It's a pretty abstract question. Somebody wonder what difference it makes. Yeah.
Doesn't the answer have to be yes and no? I mean, if we can treat the good as a genus, then sure, why not? Treat it as a genus, just like we treat being as a genus.
Right. But can we treat the good as a genus? That's another way of putting it. Why can, what's different about being? That's not quite the case with the good and the wrong.
Being would seem to include everything, but the good and the one doesn't.
Yeah. In a way, that the good and the one do include everything. But what happens here? I've got a substance, and the substance is somehow one, invisible, as a substance. Now, the quality belongs to the substance. What happens when I try to say that the quality is one in respect to the substance? What's that?
The duality in the substance.
Well, the quality becomes one because it belongs to a substance. Right. So just think through this. The blue is one. It's one color. Because color is a quality, and qualities exist as attributes of substances. So the blue is one because it belongs to something else. Another candidate for the Aristotelian joke book. Say it again. Try to make it funny this time. The blue is one thing. It's one color. Why? Because even color is a quality. And qualities belong to substances. So the unity of the blue depends on the thing to which the blue belongs. It's only one because it belongs to one thing. I'm not hearing any laughter here.
This doesn't make much sense.
Why not? It could belong to any substance, but it's got to belong to some substance. Not any substance, I guess. Sorry.
Not that
it's really small here somewhere. Not the only one, it doesn't matter. But many different kinds of substances can be good. Right? So, I'll say it. I'm sure
we couldn't even.
A little more emphasis, maybe a little more humor. The blue is one thing because the blue belongs to something else. And it carries within its nature this character belonging to something else. The blue is one because it's not. It's one because it's two. Now you're getting it. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. That's right. That's the point. You can't say it's one because it belongs to something else, because it's belonging to something else makes it two, not one. Of course, two is one, too, because it's one number. So the blue could be one like a number is one. But there's something, we lost, whatever it is, we lost the basis of the connection here. So here's what I'm going to say, okay? I'm trying to say this simply, clearly, so it won't be as paradoxical as I have said it now. When we try to define one that's not a substance, we have to define it in such a way so that it isn't one. The act of connecting it with something else that would make it one will make it not be one. So there's a kind of intrinsic contradiction to define a unity in a cross-hand way. And I want to say it's the same sort of thing in defining good. If we try to define a good, good is the end. If the end depends on something else, then it's not the end anymore. We can't define the good in a cross-end way. We can define being in a cross-end way. We can define the quality, and is a quality because it inheres in something else, substance. That makes sense. Well, sort of makes more sense anyway than the one of good. The analogy, the analogical connection is something that you have to have in the case of the good, you have to have the case of the public one. They couldn't be general. But what they can, the reason that we can talk about them is that they can piggyback in a way on another genus. Being is a genus because all of a sort. Not that there's a character, a common character, but everything is connected somehow to substance. Everything is led back, directed to substance. They all kind of go together in a way. And that makes sense for beings. Because this being depends on this, and this being depends on this. And there is a kind of dependency relationship that makes sense for beings. But that doesn't make sense for ones and goods. So for ones and goods, they're not. We can't talk about them as being general. We can talk about them as attributes of the genus of being, sort of attributes of this sort of genus. But none of this is really going to help for talking about ethics, which is really what he's interested in here. All right, I wanted to talk about the first argument here, which has to do with whether there's a genus of what has prior and posterior in it, and why it is the case that there's no genus. So I'm going to say something about this next time. But I want to also talk about physics. So if you want to read Book 3, Chapters 1 and 2 of physics, and you'll find something that looks like what we're talking about. But before we leave here, so you're not in complete suspense, ethics is about the good, except there is no good. There's not one thing that's good. So what are we going to do here? There is such a thing as an ethics, science of ethics. What is it about? Well, it's about what we're interested in, the human good. And the human good is not a function of the good, it's a function of us and our nature. So he turns everything around from what Plato said. For Plato, there's the good. If you want to understand the human good, you have to understand the good. You can't understand what it means to call something good unless you know what the good is. And that seems perfectly plausible until you start thinking about it and realize that the good is different for each thing. What follows from that? Well, you can't understand what the good for the thing is until you know what the thing is. The good is posterior to the nature of the thing, and it depends upon the nature of the thing. And that's the claim that's being made here. So what we're interested in is This science of the ethics is about, not about the good, it's about the human good. And the human good depends on human nature. So it goes along in chapter 7 to talk about human nature. And what does he say about human nature? Well, we have to pass them to reason. That's what distinguishes us from the dogs and the cats and the mosquitoes and the snails. So whatever it is that we do will somehow involve using that capacity to reason. I did promise to let you out on time, but I've broken my promise again here. But I do have to stop. But we will take this up again on Friday, along with physics. There's something familiar about this. This is the unhappy matter.
I'm not happy. We're shooting all this down.